more.
Glorious day, fellow traveler. Welcome to Science and God with Dr. G. That's me, Dr. Michael Gillen, physicist, astronomer, mathematician, and Christian. That's right, living, breathing evidence that science and Christianity are not mortal enemies, but good friends. Actually, an awesome power couple. In past journeys, I've talked to you about death, but today I want to talk to you about life. You know, it's one of those subjects that's really tricky. You think you know all about it, but you really don't. As you're about to see, life is just as mysterious as death. So, what is life? And while we're at it, when does life begin exactly? And can science ever really create life from scratch in the lab? And if so, is that really life or just some imitation? You see what I mean? These are deep questions, so let's get to it, all right? Back when I was a grad student at Cornell, I took a course in exobiology, which is the study of life outside the Earth. Lucky for me, I was at the right place at the right time because the class was taught by Frank Drake and Carl Sagan, who are the legendary founders of SETI, which stands for the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. Man, I'll never forget that first day of class. You know, Professor Drake asked us to define life. And you have to understand, my fellow grad students and I were a bunch of young hotshots. You know, we were sure that we knew the answer. We knew how to define life, all right? But boy, were we wrong. Turns out life is not easy to define. For example, if you say that life is any organism that can reproduce, you immediately run into problems. For example, a mule, which is a cross between a horse and a donkey. A mule can't reproduce, it's sterile, yet it's clearly alive. So scrap that definition. Today, decades after I took that class at Cornell, guess what? Scientists still cannot define life. I'm not kidding. And they'd be the first to admit it, by the way. But that doesn't keep them from trying. For example, I'm thinking of a scientist named Daniel Koshland. He was a brilliant biochemist at UC Berkeley. He was the editor of Science Magazine, which is one of the most prestigious journals in the world. And he was also a member of the National Academy of Sciences in Washington, D.C., which is like, you know, the holy of holies of science. It's the Vatican of science. Now, here's the thing. After spending his entire career, brilliant career, studying life of all kinds, Koshland came up with a theory he called the seven pillars of life. Now, here it is. Here are the seven criteria that supposedly define all kinds of life on and off the Earth, known and unknown, all right? Number one, life needs a master program to control its many parts. Now, for life on Earth, that's DNA. Number two, life needs to constantly adjust to changes in the environment. Now, for life on Earth, those adjustments come from constant tiny mutations in the DNA, the master program. Number three, life needs to be protected from the outside world, protected from the elements, by a membrane of some kind. Now, for life on Earth, that protection usually comes from things like cell walls and layers of skin. Number four, life needs a constant supply of energy. For life on Earth, that energy comes from things like food, air, water, and sunlight. Number five, life constantly needs to repair and reproduce itself in order to keep going. For example, now listen to this. A human heart has to pump more than 91 million times in an average lifetime. 91 million times, and it cannot skip a beat. Now, the only way it can do that is by constantly repairing and replacing worn-out cells. Number 6. Life has to quickly react to immediate dangers. For example, you and I have pain receptors that warn us away from deadly fires. And finally, number 7. Life involves lots of different chemical reactions, and each one has to stay in its own lane. Now, for life on Earth, cells are really good at making sure that the different reactions don't collide with each other. You know, like cars in a demolition derby. That would be disaster. All right. There it is. Koshland's 7 pillars of life. What do you think? Do you think he nailed it? Do you think his 7 pillars perfectly and fully define life? All kinds of life. I don't. In fact, here are 7 problems I have with Koshland's 7 pillars. Number 1, viruses. Viruses don't meet Koshland's 7 criteria. For example, they can't repair and reproduce themselves, not alone anyway. They need to infect a host cell in order to do that. So, according to Koshland, viruses are not alive. But if they aren't, why do we spend so much time and energy always trying to kill them? Come on. Number 2, individual cells. Your body has trillions of them. Now, a single functioning cell does not meet Koshland's 7 criteria. For example, it can't adjust to changes in the environment. So, according to Koshland's definition, individual cells are not alive. But if they aren't, that means your body is made up of trillions of dead entities. Again, that's nonsense. Number 3. The conception of life. When a human sperm fertilizes a human egg, the fertilized egg gives off a spectacular flash of zinc. You heard me. Now, normally, the flash is invisible, but under fluorescence, that flash looks like a huge firework going off. It's as if the universe is wired to celebrate each time a new life is conceived. Think about that. Now, after the flash, the fertilized egg begins to grow into a human embryo with more and more cells. Now, when it's 5 years old, it has at least 16 cells, and it's called a blastocyst. But here's the thing. A blastocyst does not satisfy Koshland's 7 criteria. For example, it can't react to immediate dangers. So according to Koshland, a blastocyst is not alive. But that too is nonsense, my friend. Listen, in artificial insemination, doctors routinely implant blastocysts into women wishing to become pregnant. But no one plants a dead seed into the ground and expects it to grow. Come on. Look, I remember when Laurel and I tried artificial insemination, you know, in the operating room, just before the doctor implanted the blastocysts, he projected an image of them on a huge screen, like a theater screen. We paused and we prayed over them, knowing that these little clusters of cells, which, you know, didn't look like much, were in fact, scientifically speaking, our biological offspring. Yeah. They were anything but dead. Allowed to grow inside Laurel's womb without interference, they would become our sons and daughters, each one with a unique set of fingerprints, personality, and destiny. Number 4. Mind. The mind. By definition, your mind is the sum total of your thoughts, feelings, and personality. Now, according to materialists, all of that, all of your thoughts, feelings, and personality are nothing more than the product of chemical reactions in your physical brain. You know, like the images on a TV screen. Pull the plug on the TV set and poof, all the images go away. But materialists are greatly mistaken. People who are brain dead, listen to me, people who are brain dead can still have minds that are very much alive. We know this from the study of near-death experiences. I talk about this in Journeys number 47 and 48. Check them out. Your mind, in other words, is not just the product of chemical reactions in your physical brain. There's more to it than that. The mind is an essential defining feature of many living creatures. And yet, the mind isn't even included in Koshland's seven pillars. Number five, the soul. Now, according to the Bible, the soul is an essential defining feature of many living creatures, including you and me. And yet, again, the soul is not included in Koshland's seven pillars. Number six, the spirit. Now, according to the Bible, you and I are made in the image of God, which means each of us has a spirit, the spirit of God, our creator. Now, I like the way the Apostle Paul puts it. Listen to this, quote, "Now may the God of peace himself sanctify you entirely, and may your spirit and soul and body be preserved complete at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ," unquote. The spirit, my friend, is an essential defining feature of human life. And yet, once again, the spirit is not included in Koshland's seven pillars. And finally, number seven, artificial life forms. Today, scientists are creating novel creatures in the lab, including robots that think, feel, and behave just like humans. Okay, so they're still pretty crude, but one day, we might be able to create humanoids so realistic that Koshland's seven pillars would consider them to be alive. So realistic that laws could be created to protect their lives. Don't laugh. These possibilities are no longer the stuff of science fiction, my friend. They are very real. I talk about them in my book, The End of Life as We Know It. Check it out. Which brings me to a fascinating question that a fellow traveler named Tariana recently asked me. Here it is. Dr. G, she said, "Will our creations ever have souls?" Great question, huh? Tariana, there are two things I can say to you with enormous confidence. Number one, scientists will never be able to create a living soul. They don't even recognize the existence of a soul. And two, scientists will never be able to rob the soul of a creature that already has a soul. Are you hearing me? Only God can create and destroy souls. We humans will never have that power, no matter how clever or creative we become. Let me put it another way. You know, many people claim that because we're able to create novel life forms now, we're becoming equal to God. But listen carefully, my friend, listen carefully. We will never be equal to God because we will never be able to create life from nothing. All we can ever do is mix and match or piece together in novel ways parts that already exist. You know, chemical elements and bits of DNA. We're not creating life from nothing. Instead, we're like little kids playing with Legos that somebody else created, namely God. You following me? It reminds me of that verse, you know, that pretty much puts us in our place. It goes like this, quote, "So neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow," unquote. Look, I give Koshland lots of credit, okay? He does a pretty thorough job of itemizing the key physical properties of life. But there's more to life than that. You, my friend, you are not just a laundry list of physical properties. You are not just a fancy sack of chemicals programmed to walk, talk, and adjust to the environment, to stuff your face with food, to stay away from danger, to procreate. Come on. If you were just that, honestly, you wouldn't be worth much on the open market. Here's what I mean. Listen, you are mostly made up of six chemicals, all right? Oxygen, carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, calcium, and phosphorus. Now, using current market prices for high-grade chemicals, one chemist calculated that your total chemical worth is, are you ready? Just about $585. That's not even enough for a family of four to have a fun day at Disneyland, for goodness sakes. Is that really all you're worth? Even if you sold all of your body parts on the black market, you'd still only be worth about $500,000. I know that sounds like a lot, but it isn't. Think about it. The Bank of America, for crying out loud, spends more than that on staples every year. Is that really all you're worth? Well, anyone who thinks so has a very low opinion of life, a very small-minded view of life. As we've seen, there's more to you, my friend, than what science and Koshland see in you. You're more than the sum of your chemical, mechanical, and biological parts. You're more even than just a living soul. To God, who breathed his spirit into you at the moment of conception, at that wonderful moment the entire universe celebrated with a spectacular flash, you, my fellow traveler, are a priceless living miracle.
Okay, that's it for now. Remember, this podcast is not a lecture series. It's a conversation. So now it's your turn. Comments, questions? I'm eager to hear from you. There's all kinds of ways you can connect up with me via my social media links in the show notes below. Till next time, I'm still Dr. G saying, I love science, I love God, I also love you, my fellow traveler. Thanks for listening.